Welcome to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the Internet Archive at ConcordNewsRadio.com and coming to you from our sumptuously appointed studios high atop Concord's Main Street, that is in the window of the Concord Photo Service, where you can walk by and watch us like we were animals at the zoo. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com. Find out what sunshine can do for you. We're very pleased this holiday season to welcome Gibson's Books as a sponsor for Off the Record. Gibson's Books in downtown Concord, an independent bookstore with games, toys, books, magazines, and more for all your holiday gift giving. Shop local, shop Gibson's this holiday season. I'm joined by the irrepressible Chris Ryan, the guy who knows it all about politics. And you know, I was thinking we'd be talking a little bit, and maybe we will, about sex in Congress. I have a lot to say about sex in Congress with the latest scandals involving Al Franken and John Conyers, but there actually is some very interesting and breaking news on the Russian collusion front. There is a report that Mike Flynn, General Mike Flynn, who, as some of you may know, was seen pictured sitting next to Vladimir Putin himself, Comrade Putinsky, at a dinner in Russia, for which Mike Flynn was invited. Also, of course, Jill Stein, Green Party candidate, same dinner, invited to sit with Vladimir Putin, big friend of President Trumpsky. Michael Flinsky, he says that he was directed by Trumpsky campaign to reach out to Russians. This is very big news, Chris Ryans.
Oh, it is. This is potential break, if you will, in the investigation. It is big because of the fact that Michael Flynn has pled guilty to lying to the FBI, to misleading the FBI, providing false information, fraudulent information. And in exchange for this plea, which is, I would say, reduced from what he could have been charged with, given the foreign ties, not registering as a foreign agent. He was working with Turkey and various other officials across the globe. I would say that this indicates that not only is he working, as he has said he is, working with the special counsel and is offered to provide any information the special counsel needs and to be completely forthright, and has signaled, according to reports, that he is going to spill the goods, if you will, on Trump and the family, and that he says that the president ordered him directly to establish those ties with Russia and to reach out to them, something that the president has denied. And the fact that Mueller, given what he had on Flynn and the many, many years in jail those charges would have potentially brought, to me, this indicates that he has good reason to believe that Flynn either has or will provide him with information in regards to the president.
So let's go back just a little bit. What was Flynn's position in the government? And before he had a position in the government, what was his job with the Trump campaign?
So he was national security advisor for the president. It did not last very long. Lasted only a number of weeks before he was fired, left as a result of lying to Mike Pence, the vice president, allegedly, about meeting with Kislyak.
Kislyak, for those who need to know, Kislyak is Russian ambassador to United States.
One of the big signs that this was all going to unravel in the direction that it has is when Kislyak was called home to Russia. Because they, I think that
we want Kislyak in Moscow, right. Not in United States, because we want to make sure that he don't talk.
Right.
We do not want Kislyak talking because, of course, we deny. I am Vladimir Putinsky. I deny any collusion, any attempt to interfere with United States election. This is simply talking points from disgruntled liberals who might find some problem, but we are not involved at all.
Right. So Flynn was, again, the national security advisor and held an incredibly key role in the president's inner circle. During the campaign, he was a chief surrogate. He had previously served in the Obama administration, and of course, had also served in our military as well. So this is, you know, I think what may get lost in all this is how significant this is, that that General Flynn has, pled guilty to lying to the FBI and has acknowledged his behavior. This is an administration official. It's not just individuals who were in the campaign or anything else. This was his national security advisor, a key administration official.
And this is the first time, if these reports are true, And I would say if the reports are true, and they appear to be reliable reporting at this time, this is the first time that anyone has tied President Trump directly with an order to, during the campaign, with an order directed that there be, for a kind word, we'll call it outreach, that Flynn reach out, contact, establish contact with the Russians about various cooperation or issues or what have you. But the fact that the president's name is now tied by Flynn to an effort to reach to the Russians is very significant in the Mueller investigation, because up to now, we haven't had any reports of that kind of direct evidence against the president. And frankly, it leads me to think about the president's crazy tweeting over the past week as things got hot in various arenas. His tweets were off the chart on the crazy scale. And it may be that his people have told him, Flynn is singing. He is singing like a bird, and he's going to come for you, because right. he's going to talk. And if he's talking about the president, he's also talking about the president's family, because the president kept his family as his closest advisors. And as we know, we've known that Jared Kushner was involved in meetings with the Russians. We know that Paul Manafort, the campaign chair, was involved in meetings with the Russians. We know that Don Trump Jr. was involved in meetings with the Russians. We know that Jeff Sessions never recalled that he had met with Kislyak, not in connection with his senatorial duties, but campaign meetings. And now we have the president directing the man who became his national security advisor to contact the Russians.
And how to react in a joint way to the enhanced sanctions that were pushed forth by the Obama administration as a result of tampering in the election. So let's just break this down as to what we have here at this point in time. And we have Donald Trump lying about the fact that he had given Flynn the directive to talk to the Russians. We have a lot of meetings that took place or were attempted to take place. We have Donald Trump Jr. Coordinating with WikiLeaks and Julian Assange. And of course, Assange has a negative connotation in United States intelligence community and the government as a whole. But we still don't have, and this is, again, it's the tip of the iceberg. We are still a ways away from, well, we would assume, in terms of public, what we know publicly, from having the biggest part of this, and that's the why. Why does Donald Trump act this way in regards to Vladimir Putin? Why was he making the outreach and coordinating with Russia? Why were these attempts made, and how far did they go? I mean, I think at this point in time, we still only have a very limited amount of actual information as compared to what we will know.
I'll give you a little insight about Donald Trump and his real estate businesses and practices and licensing and salesmanship. For years and years, the president, when he was a private citizen, made his money flipping real estate and dealing, making real estate deals. He needed a lot of money to do it. When because of his bad business skills, he went bankrupt a lot of times, he had to turn to others for financing. The first people that he turned to, and you can find reports about this, were crooked mobsters in the United States. And when that ran out, he turned to Russians. He turned to Russian mobsters. He turned to the Russian mafia, the Russian oligarchs, the Ukrainians connected to Russia for his money. And Mueller knows about that. He has all those financial connections. And I think that he's going to put two and two together, because he's a lot smarter than I am and knows a lot more than I do at this point about the deep ties of Trump and his organization and his family to Russia and Russian money and financing. And he's going to tie that right in to now that Trump had taken over the presidency, his ability to then pay back and collude in order to secure the presidency and then change policy to favor the Russians was payback for the collusion. That's just my theory. We'll see what happens. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM. Streaming live over the internet, archived at ConcordNewsRadio.com. Brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. And we're very pleased to welcome Gibson's Books as a sponsor for our show. Gibson's Books in downtown Concord. Books, magazines, toys, gifts for every member of your family. This holiday season, shop local, shop downtown Concord, shop Gibson's Bookstore. We'll be right back to talk with Chase Hageman of the Concord Coalition about health care and debt and what it means for you. Don't go away. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, still coming to you from our fabulous studios high atop Concord's Main Street. Brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. And we're very pleased to welcome Gibson's Bookstore as a sponsor for the holiday season. Toys, gifts, books for everyone in the family, fun and merriment. Shop local, shop at Gibson's Bookstore this holiday season. I'm very pleased to welcome Chase Hageman back to Off the Record. Chase is the New England Regional Executive Director for the Concord Coalition. Chase, welcome to Off the Record.
Happy to be back, Paul.
Now, the Concord Coalition just held a forum on health care and the economy at the University of New Hampshire Law School. I was pleased to attend. I learned a lot, interesting discussion, and we're going to talk about healthcare, the economy, and what happens in the Republican tax bills to and about healthcare. But I wanted to start with a quote, and this is an interesting quote because it comes from the father of our country. And I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about George Washington. George Washington, who, when his father asked him, "George, did you chop down that cherry tree?" famously is mythologized to have said, "Yes, Dad, I did chop down the cherry tree," although there was no cherry tree, and George probably did tell a few lies in his lifetime. In his farewell address, which was actually just a letter published as he rode out of town and into the sunset, he made some very prescient remarks, and he said this: "As a very important source of strength and security, cherish public credit. One method of preserving it is to use it as sparingly as possible, avoiding occasions of expense by cultivating peace, but remembering also that timely disbursements to prepare for danger frequently prevent much greater disbursements to repel it, avoiding likewise the accumulation of debt, not only by shunning occasions of expense, but by vigorous exertion in time of peace to discharge the debts which unavoidable wars may have occasioned, not ungenerously throwing upon posterity the burden which we ourselves ought to bear. The execution of these maxims belongs to your representatives, but it is necessary that public opinion should cooperate. To facilitate to them the performance of their duty, it is essential that you should practically bear in mind that towards the payment of debts, there must be revenue, that to have revenue, there must be taxes, that no taxes can be devised which are not more or less inconvenient and unpleasant, that the intrinsic embarrassment inseparable from the selection of the proper objects, which is always a choice of difficulties, ought to be a decisive motive for a candid construction of the conduct of the government in making it, and for a spirit of acquiescence in the measures for obtaining revenue which the public exigencies may at any time dictate."
Now, you got a little British there, Paul.
I know, but the accents actually back then were a little British because everybody was just a little bit British.
A little bit British.
But so
we may have lost half the audience, by the way, by reading that.
Yeah, whole thing. I know. You know, that's a little bit old-fashioned, yeah. But at the same time, often when people start talking about debts and deficits and the national debt and annual deficits, people glaze over. They say, "Why is it important to me?" It certainly was recognized by George Washington as a critical and important function of government to be responsible about paying for what you had to spend. If you went to war and you had to spend and had to borrow to do it, which is the way wars have always been funded, you know, you borrow because you never planned for them, but you get into them. You got to borrow to fight a war. And then when peacetime comes, you're supposed to make it back.
Yeah. And he didn't say, you know, it's good to have no debt, like you should just avoid debt in general. He said, use it sparingly.
That's right.
Which we've been using it quite a bit lately.
Well, and arguably we haven't been using it sparingly. I mean, when I was in Congress, we were faced with a serious recession. Mm-hmm. We had we were still involved in the war in Iraq, which some people thought was a $3 trillion boondoggle. We then had the economic collapse of 2008. We had to spend and invest in recovery, which was a significant political issue. And then the president chose, and this really was a choice, to take on health care reform on the grounds that in the long term for the health of the nation and the health of revenue, that if we didn't start to get a handle on soaring costs for health care, that both the federal government budget as well as individual pockets would suffer. And so the president spent an enormous amount of political capital The Affordable Care Act was passed. Now, as we've seen, the Republican mantra has been to get rid of the Affordable Care Act. The current tax bill, there are provisions about health care in the tax bills working their way.
As far as we know right now, it could change at any moment.
It could change at any moment. We know that the House, at least the latest news I have is we know that the House had passed a tax bill. The latest news I had, and you may have something even newer, is that the Senate was held up last night by trigger provisions because Senator Corker, on his way out, he who had the famous tweet storm with President Trump, Corker demanded basically that there be a trigger that to increase taxes if growth is projected. And crazily, I might add, by the Republicans, didn't happen. There would be a trigger to raise taxes. That stopped everything dead in its tracks because, as it turned out, it was not permissible under Senate rules to have the trigger.
Right.
And they're still trying to figure that out. But what I want to...
Well, they do claim now they have 50 votes to get it at least through the Senate. So we'll see what happens. But I don't know how they can claim that based on some of the changes they've made. They might have lost a couple votes along the way.
Who knows at this point? But we shall see. Irrespective of that, talk to us a little bit about what you heard at the forum about healthcare and the economy, and healthcare and debts, and let's talk about what the proposals in the tax bill do to healthcare in America.
So I want to back up a little bit. It wasn't really a Concord Coalition event. We weren't the specific hosts. The Health, Law, and Policy Society at the law school was. We were asked to provide a speaker, so we brought in our awesome policy director, Josh Gordon, who provided some really good insights on fiscal policy with regard to healthcare. But I think the biggest thing to point out is how large a driver healthcare is in our economy, how much of an expense it is. I mean, the government spends one of every $6 on healthcare in some capacity. We're on our way to one in every $5 by 2025. And the biggest drivers within healthcare spending are Medicare and Medicaid. So those are large programs that are growing and driving a lot of that expansion in healthcare costs. The perspective that was brought forth in the event was, especially from the Concord Coalition and what Josh said specifically, was we kind of have two paths in front of us to take on healthcare in our country. We can either have the government take a larger role and sort of pursue the path of some type of universal or single-payer, all-payer system, or go the route that the shift that we're sort of trying to do with what happened with the ACA, and that was to having the government play a role where it's encouraging efficiency and cost controls.
In the private market.
And the issue that we're seeing with the current tax bill and some of the more recent proposals on healthcare in Congress is you could argue that they're making an effort to be fiscally responsible in the sense that they're looking to cut away federal spending on healthcare. But what the proposals don't do, really in any capacity, is address the underlying issues of healthcare cost growth. So just lumping off a certain amount of money right now from federal spending isn't going to help us in the long term in terms of helping sort of bend that healthcare cost curve that comes along with shift in demographic, an aging society, continual chronic illnesses that are more expensive to treat, and how we're going to address that as a country.
You know, way back in the 90s, there was a saying, it's the economy, stupid. And now I think that really one of the things we could say is it's the demographics,
Absolutely. Stupid. Absolutely.
And, you know, as a full-fledged member of the baby boom generation, and now somebody who is on the federal health program, Medicare, there were some interesting takeaways from me from the forum. One of the fundamental discussions in this country, and a discussion that is not a new discussion, is the question of the role of the federal government.
Right.
It has been at the core of our political debate since the beginning of the Republic. Do we have a strong central government or a weak central government? We have a republic in which certain powers were given to the federal government and powers were left to the states, all in service of the inalienable rights of the individual to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. But you can almost see in almost any major debate that we have had this central question: how big a role should the federal government play?
Well, the government already plays a pretty big role in healthcare. I mean, they provide about 65% of what's spent on healthcare in our nation through healthcare related to military service and veterans, Medicare, Medicaid, the tax exclusion for health for employer provided healthcare, and then ACA subsidies. So they're already a big player in how much we spend as a nation on healthcare.
You know, I don't think a lot of people really think about it or realize. When I campaigned unsuccessfully in 2010 and got clobbered in the 2010 Senate race here in the state, largely because of my vote on healthcare, what I heard from a lot of angry people was, keep your government hands off my health care, but don't touch my Medicare.
Right, right.
And I think that there are many people who probably didn't realize that Medicare is essentially a government single-payer program. It was instituted to help people who were elderly with their health care costs, just as Medicaid, a large federal program, came in to help people who were poor with their health care costs, under the theory that in pursuit of ensuring the right of people to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, government has a role to play for its citizens. And along with this discussion of the role of the federal government is a discussion about do people have a right to the government's helping them with their health care. Not necessarily a right to health insurance, but a government role to ensure health care in the pursuit of life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. It often falls along the same lines in political discussions where people say, well, there's no right written in the Constitution where it says you have a right to health insurance or you have a right to health care. And then others would say, wait a second, the Constitution and the Declaration of Independence were a long time ago. They're living documents. They've been interpreted by many people. And in a modern society, why should we be different than most of the other developed nations in making sure there's a robust government role for providing health care, which is should be seen as a right in modern society.
And I'm going to do the politically expedient thing and sidestep whether this becomes a partisan conversation from my end or not, and we'll just say this. Regardless of the role that we want as a society in terms of government and healthcare, from an organizational vantage point, we simply say, fine, whatever our country wants, just make sure we're paying for it. And that's the big issue right now. When you look at Medicare specifically, it's not paying for itself. There is a part of Medicare that is paid for through the payroll tax, but then there are other aspects of Medicare where premiums only cover about 25% of the program itself, and the rest all comes from general tax revenues. And that's a real problem given how quickly Medicare is expanding and how much our citizens need health care within the country and how much it costs per person.
And obviously, well, not obviously, people may not know, the Concord Coalition, which was founded by Warren Rudman and Paul Tsongas 25 years ago as a bipartisan, nonpartisan effort to promote fiscal responsibility, takes no sides in the political debate. And I appreciate that, and I appreciate working with the Concord Coalition in that way. Well, of course it does, but you know, it is fair from where I sit. I'm honored to have a microphone to talk about it, and people understand my political persuasion pretty well. But irrespective of the political persuasion, for example, it's not necessarily the standard Democratic line to talk about fiscal responsibility, but I'm really concerned and have been since I first ran for Congress in 2004 on a Take Back the Deficit tour, very concerned because what I say to my progressive friends is You can't do the things you want to do for people. You can't fund the programs you want to fund to help provide equal opportunity for people and give not a handout but a hand up. You can't do all those things if you're not going to have a government that's fiscally responsible, because frankly, paying 20% of the federal budget on interest on the debt, which is now, what, $20 trillion?
I wish it were $20 trillion. Our total debt is over $20 trillion now. Our publicly held debt, which is the more frequently referenced number, is around $15 or $16 trillion, which represents almost 80% of our economy. That's the highest since World War II.
Yeah, so we're not in a good situation. We're now facing a tax proposal. It happens to come from the Republicans who control Congress, which by the latest score in terms of the Senate bill that's under consideration, the latest scoring that is a nonpartisan scoring is that the Republican tax bill would take the deficit higher by $1 trillion over 10 years. We're talking with Chase Hageman, who is the New England regional director of the nonpartisan Concord Coalition, working on promoting the notion of fiscal responsibility in our federal budgeting practices. This is Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living facility designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. Visit revisionenergy.com for a free consultation. That's right, a free consultation at revisionenergy.com and find out what sunshine can do for you. And we're very happy in this holiday season to welcome Gibson's Books downtown Concord for all your holiday shopping. Books, toys, games, magazines, attached to a great cafe, a great place to hang out and find gifts for yourself and the entire family, all your friends and everybody you know. Visit Gibson's Books and shop local downtown Concord. We're going to take a short break and we'll be right back to talk about the very sexy, very exciting subject of debts, deficits, and health care. It's kind of like Guy Fieri, debts, deficits, and health care. We'll be back. We're back. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet and brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living facility designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour. Celebrate life at the Birches. Call 224-9111. We are powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com and find out what sunshine can do for you. And we welcome Gibson's Bookstore in downtown Concord. Gibson's Books has toys, games, magazines, books, you name it, to delight every member of your family this holiday season. Shop local, shop Gibson's. It's a great place to buy stuff for the holidays. And we're talking with Chase Hageman, New England Regional Director for the Concord Coalition, a nonpartisan organization that I'm proud to work with, calling for fiscal responsibility in our government. Man, oh man, now that's an uphill battle these days, because although Concord Coalition is nonpartisan, one would have to admit at least that passing a tax so-called reform bill that that deepens our $20 trillion plus national debt by another $1 trillion is hardly fiscally responsible. And in that light, as we've been talking about healthcare and the role that the government plays and should play in healthcare or shouldn't play in healthcare, it seems that out of an abundance of ideology, at least it seems to me, there's been a lot of undermining of the ACA going on. For example, the Trump administration has not been publicizing the dates on which people could sign up for the ACA. We've got a demographic issue with baby boomers coming to Medicare and Medicare not able to meet all its current needs to stay sustainable. We've got challenges around the states and the federal funding for Medicaid in states and whether states will pay for Medicaid expansion. And the tax bill does some serious damage both to Medicare and Medicaid and seems to me to shift the money that would otherwise go to health care for the elderly and poor to corporate tax cuts, which corporate CEOs have said are going to go just to their shareholders and not go to raising wages and hiring more people. What gives?
So I can confidently say, Paul, that in a totally nonpartisan manner, declare that from what I've read and seen on this bill, it's fiscally awful. Like, it's not just fiscally irresponsible. It's just not well thought out in terms of long-term fiscal policy or maybe even short-term fiscal policy for that matter. It's just the wrong environment for how far this Congress is going with these tax cuts. I mean, this is our 25th anniversary, like you said, and we're doing our 25 lessons learned, and one of those lessons learned is that tax cuts don't pay for themselves. Especially, I mean, we're talking about a bill that could potentially go from, a 38 or 39% corporate rate to 20%. I mean, that's a lot of lost revenue. And that can be a real problem when you're experiencing budget deficits that are already $700 billion a year on our way to $1 trillion. And getting back to the healthcare issue, although this is presented as a tax reform bill, there are measures in it that would impact the ACA. At least on the Senate side, what I've seen is a weakening or an eliminating of the subsidies that go toward the individual mandate in the ACA.
They get rid of the individual mandate, which is projected to mean that 13 million Americans will lose their health insurance.
Right, because it would essentially destabilize the markets, which can be a real problem, especially from a cost perspective. When the federal government is providing premium assistance and you've got much higher risk pools that result from no longer having a mandate, you're going to have healthcare providers or insurers pulling out of those markets because it's going to become too expensive. And those that remain will have expensive plans and programs that the federal government's supposed to be subsidizing. So the cost associated to the federal government suddenly goes up by virtue of taking something like that out. And there have been, like you said, other attacks on the House side in terms of their tax bill. We're going to bring those two things. Congress is going to try and bring those two things together.
Assuming the Senate
passes a bill. But undermining things, what's the specific thing I'm looking for? The cost-sharing reduction payments. Getting rid of those would hurt healthcare providers and insurers and thus making it a less stable market and more expensive for the federal government. I mean, there are, aside from the individual mandate, little tweaks here and there that are meant to sort of pull the rug out from underneath what remains of any stability in the ACA.
And beyond that, there are actual cuts that
right.
end up getting made both to Medicare
right.
and Medicaid
through block granting.
Block granting that end up financing tax cuts for the rich.
Right.
There's no other way to talk about it.
Well, and the other way to talk about it is. There has been bipartisan support in the past for doing engaging in the concept of block granting, especially on Medicaid, because it limits how much the federal government contributes. However, in the past, those suggestions have been made with a block grant that comes in at an existing level of what's needed for those states, and then it's tied to some kind of inflation or growth. the block grants that are being considered come in well under what's needed in individual states, and it's tied to a ratio that's well below the growth of inflation. So again, it may be fiscally responsible in the sense that, okay, well, we're just cutting dollars out from what the federal government would have to contribute. But in the long term, doing something like that is likely just going to result in the need for more federal funding to subsidize state programs, because now you're requiring the states to take the shoulder the most of the burden for their Medicaid programs, and most of them are not equipped to do that.
Well, I mean, we could talk endlessly about the problems in the tax bill, and they are myriad. I'm sitting here thinking about a good friend of mine who is employed as a real estate broker, and essentially he's an independent contractor. He's in the individual market for healthcare here in New Hampshire. He had worked for an employer who provided healthcare. He doesn't now, and his premiums are scheduled to go up by 100%. He can't afford it. He simply can't afford it. There is nothing that on the horizon, at least in this tax bill or any of the proposals currently being advanced by the Republican-dominated majorities in the House and the Senate and the White House, that would help him. Thereafter, destabilizing and doing away with the ACA, it appears because it was a Democratic President Obama program. It appears to me to be ideologically based, and that's sad because there are bipartisan solutions that could be framed to stabilize, secure Medicare. There are bipartisan solutions for Medicaid, as you say, which if there was some negotiation would work. And in fact, there are bipartisan solutions to tax reform that could in fact address the issues around the corporate tax rate and how to provide incentives for corporations, if you gave them a lower tax rate, to bring the significant cash they are putting offshore, to bring it back and to incentivize people to hire people and raise wages, which would accomplish the aims that are said to be the aims of the tax bill. Unfortunately, this tax bill doesn't do it. It does a lot of damage to the individual pocketbooks. It destabilizes the ACA. Folks, it's a bad bill. It's supported by only 25% of the American population by the latest poll. There is a good reason for that. We've been talking to Chase Hageman, the New England Regional Director of the Concord Coalition, a nonpartisan group working to promote the notion of fiscal responsibility in government. Chase, thanks for joining us and Off the Record.
Paul, thanks for having me. I always enjoy being on the record with you, off the record.
On the record, off the record.
And I'll just say this, one final, you know, tidbit. We need rigorous public involvement in these processes. And we need the voice of the people to be heard so that we get the bills we need coming out of Congress.
People, make your voices heard. Contact your representatives. Contact your senators. Your voices count if you use them. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streaming live over the internet, brought to you by the Birches at Concord, New Hampshire's first assisted living community, designed specifically for those living with Alzheimer's, dementia, or other forms of memory impairment. Join a tour, celebrate life at the Birches, call 224-9111. We're powered by Revision Energy. For the past 9 years, Revision's team of local solar professionals has been putting sunshine to work for thousands of Granite State families and businesses looking to save money and save the planet for our kids. For your free consultation, visit revisionenergy.com. That's revisionenergy.com, and find out what sunshine can do for you. And we're pleased to welcome Gibson's Books as a holiday sponsor for this show. Gibson's Books in downtown Concord. Books, games, toys, magazines, and a great environment for you to shop for all your holiday gift giving. Shop local, shop Gibson's this holiday season. Folks, don't go away. We'll be back after this. Welcome back to Off the Record with Paul Hodes here on WKXL AM and FM, streamed live over the internet. We're brought to you by the Birches at Concord. We're brought to you by Revision Energy, and we're brought to you by Gibson's Books in downtown Concord. Well, in this edition of Off the Record, we went back to Russia so that we could have a little conversation with Vladimir Putinsky and find out about the latest breaks in the Mueller investigation of the collusion of the White House with the Russians. And we talked about debts, deficits, and healthcare with Concord Coalition's Chase Hageman. The tax bill is, as he says, fiscally awful. So that's the story this week, folks. We're going to have more next week because Donald Trump keeps on tweeting and Mueller keeps on investigating. Thanks to our sponsors. Thanks to our listeners. It's Off the Record with Paul Hodes on WKXL AM and FM. We'll see you next week.